Week 140 of Brad's Branded Thoughts. It's a great time to be a Hawkeye. The Iowa football team coming off an impressive 3-touchdown victory over the Wisconsin Badgers, and the Iowa Hawkeye men's basketball team undefeated after wins against North Carolina, Northern Illinois, and of course in the CyHawk series over Iowa State. Iowa plays number one Gonzaga this Saturday. The Iowa women are also rolling. Although they had just had a game canceled just a few days ago. We've got a great show in front of us. Alex Brad will be joining us momentarily. But first of all, we've got a special guest on the show this week, Frank Henderson, the uncle of Iowa freshman guard Tony Perkins. He'll be sitting down with us and talking a little bit about Tony, but also about this team and this freshman class that really, I think most people would agree, is the future of Fran's squad here in Iowa City. So we're going to talk about Tony, we're going to talk about Keegan Murray and the rest of this class, as well as the matchup this Saturday against Gonzaga. So we'll be back in just a moment to hear from Frank Henderson, and then we'll talk Hawkeye hoops, Hawkeye football, and preview the big game on Saturday. Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brad's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold, or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan. We'd love your support. All of our content is free, so again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well, @FromTheHawkeye, @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out, and it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area. Well, Frank, first of all, I appreciate you coming on the podcast tonight. And first of all, I want to talk about, it's kind of a good timing, actually, in hindsight, because Tony Perkins got some serious playing time on Sunday. And for the first time, we really were able to see as Iowa fans, his athletic ability and his wherewithal on the court. So maybe just talk a little bit about his background and your role in his development and, of course, his journey to Iowa City.
Obviously, for those for those who don't know, Tony is my nephew. My sister Anita, we're just a few years apart in age. Tony is a kid. He's coming from a family who historically has always been active in sports. We have a cousin of ours who played football at Michigan. This was during the mid-90s. You know, his one of his oldest aunts, you know what I'm saying? She played college ball as well. I played college ball myself. Even his, he has another cousin who played college ball. So he's coming from a family who's athletic and always been in sports, primarily in basketball. So just him growing up through his early years on, Tony's played everything. You're looking at baseball, you're looking at football. And a basketball player, and ultimately he decided basketball as his primary sport and took it very seriously, you know, going to his junior high years, starting about 7th, 8th grade, and it just flourished into him being one of LN's and Indiana's one of the top ball players. And Coach McCaffrey saw his talents and his drive, and he ended at Iowa.
What was his recruiting journey like? I know, again, we as Iowa people kind of have an idea of some of the schools that were involved with his recruitment, but what other serious options did he have on the table that he was considering?
I think during the time, the serious options really came down to what is his best route in decision-making that can help him become a professional. I think a lot of college coaches, when they talked to Tony, they just talked about, you know, potential playing time and, you know, what the team's going to be and how the team's going to be in the future. So in teams of hindsight that he was considering, you know, you can look at Ball State as one in the MAC conference. You can look at Morehead State as another. You can look at, I know Cincinnati gave him a little interest there. I know that Kentucky was really pursuing him a lot. Who else? I mean, you had Western Michigan, you had Ohio University, you had Miami of Ohio. I'm pretty much a lot of schools within the Midwest were kind of had Tony on the map and the radar. And he honestly liked Iowa the best for a couple of reasons. McCaffrey and Dillard talked about how to become a professional for one and how to take your craft to the next level. I think that's what intrigued him the best. It wasn't so much about just the logistics of it, but more so of how can I improve my game in an atmosphere that allows me, gives me opportunity to display my talent as well. So that's why he kind of chose Iowa in that aspect.
How much of it was as well just being able to see, you know, you talked about his ability to, or Fran's ability and his coaching staff be able to get someone ready for the pros. You look at guys like Aaron White, guys like Jared Uthoff was fairly highly recruited, but mm-hmm. guys that maybe weren't highly recruited out of high school, and you see the careers. Aaron White's had a terrific career overseas. How much of it was being able to see Fran turn other 2 to 3 star recruits into pro players?
You know, just knowing Fran's history, I had a buddy of mine, assistant coach of mine, because I coach, you know, AAU basketball. Assistant coach of mine, he actually he was a collegiate athlete at Iowa. So just my years when I was at Ball State playing, I knew he was at Iowa playing. So I always pay attention to, of course, close friends I played ball with, and I saw that the way he developed to be a professional athlete, and he went overseas for a couple years. You know, he kind of talked to me that when the Iowa offer came along, he kind of just gave me some insight of how, you know, Fran is and how Dillard is. And, you know, I said, you know what, you know, and he shared that same information to Tony, and Tony again took it in consideration of how that same type of philosophy that which he learned from Fran and Dillard at his years of playing, he can use that same philosophy and prove it to his game and hopefully pan out to be a professional one day.
His athleticism. I mean, I know that, again, as outsiders, we saw that on recruiting tape, but Tony's athleticism was really on display on Sunday. And would you say that's the biggest thing that he brings to the floor for Iowa? Of course, this is a loaded bunch here in 2020, but moving forward, just his athletic ability just seems to be far and above probably anybody else on this team.
His athletic ability is definitely a key asset that he's going to use as a Hawkeye. I think the biggest thing he brings to the table is his IQ. His IQ is nonetheless one of the best I've seen as far as coaching young athletes. Being able to play multiple positions and guarding multiple positions is something that I believe Fran and Dillard saw in him as well, outside of athleticism and the IQ. So having the intangibles and being a multi-asset athlete, I think is what Tony will display throughout his years at Iowa.
Of course, we've talked about the group this year, and it's an interesting year to be a freshman at Iowa. You talk about COVID. You talk about just this the hype around this team, and so far so good as far as living up to that hype. How has Tony kind of accepted his role this year, even though minutes are going to be hard to come by?
He's a team player. I mean, he's accepted his role. We kind of knew – as a family, and he knew as well going into Iowa that, you know, it's a senior driven team. Luca Garza was, I mean, that kid is phenomenal. You know, Luca Garza is definitely one of the top five athletes in the NCAA right now. So we kind of knew what type of dynamic we was walking into. And I think him having that previous relationship with Luca and Wiskamp and Joe and those guys prior to him going to Iowa, it made him feel welcome. And they took him with full hands and full arms and said, you know what, kid, we see the potential in you as a teammate. We also want that to help us to win games. So I think the early on relationship of his teammates, when he accepted the offer, helped bring joy into him. You're like, you know what, I can see myself fitting into this program and elevating this program to the next level.
What did he like in Fran? I mean, obviously, besides just the Fran's ability to develop players and get them to that next level, whether that be overseas or here in the U.S., what did he like about Fran as a person? A lot of people from the outside, especially outside of the state, view Fran as a guy who's got maybe a short fuse. We've seen him blow up over the years at times, but he's always been described by former players. Of course, on our show, we've always had players that have called him a player's coach. And they love Fran. What was it about Fran that Tony was able to see that he liked from a personal level?
Honesty. That's probably the biggest thing. Meeting Fran from day one, he was straightforward. He said, hey, I like the kid, I like this game. Of course, he named multiple of intangibles that we can use him on the floor. And after he kind of explained to, you know, Tony how he can fit in the system, he went ahead and offered Tony. There was no long wait. There was no long hesitation in between that. He was a sincere guy by what he meant for Tony and how his future may look out. And he extended the offer, like, I would say maybe within a 2-week span of talking to Tony, you know, 2 or 3 week span of talking to Tony. And I think that's what kind of like, you know, let him know coach is all in with him. And with that being all in, he's going to be all in with you as well as a player.
Absolutely. What's the journey through COVID been like for Tony? It's a weird year to be a freshman at any university, let alone an athlete at a Big Ten school. So what's that been like for him?
I mean, the same as any athlete, but I think it's different as a freshman. And that's a good question that you asked. As a freshman, I think he has all this anticipation of the stories in which we tell. Those who went to college before him, those who played a sport prior to him. He's going into with the same expectations, but now we're all across the country, across the world, honestly, are now telling our children, like, you know what, this is something we've never experienced. So we're just trying to funnel, you know, our guidance through what we do day to day versus during COVID. And I think for him being a college athlete during those times, he's okay with understanding that, you know, I got to take my game serious, just school and basketball. And honestly, that's what you're there for, besides all the other fun things you can get into. But COVID's really limited those fun activities to where, okay, I'm here now to really take care of business.
What's his relationship like with the other freshmen? I mean, it's a big freshman class. I've been particularly impressed with the play of Aaron Ulis. Obviously, Keegan Murray's getting a lot of time so far. But Tony, you know, I think he had 10 minutes and 7 boards on Sunday. So certainly he's lived up to the hype around him. What is his relationship like with the fellow freshmen on this team?
You know what? They're their own. They're their own. How can I say it? They're their own pack, man. They love each other. You know, I know the Murray twins, they went on the visit when Tony was there. So when he had his official visit, the twins were there also. So he already made a connection with the twins from day one. Aaron Ulis is another kid I've always seen from a coaching's eye because there was times that we were running across Aaron Ulis during AAU tournaments. So I already kind of knew who Aaron Ulis was. And Tony did too. So they connected offhand just because of similar backgrounds and similar history of playing basketball. So the guys, I mean, they're a great group. They get along. They encourage one another. They're out there having fun. I think that's the most important thing we tend to lose sight of is like, you know, if you're doing your job, more importantly, are you having fun? And they are.
Absolutely. You kind of see the future with this team. I mean, I thought just, again, we've had limited time to kind of evaluate these five freshmen in there together. Fran's talked about Josh's struggles health-wise with his just stamina getting sick and taking so long to get over here and whatnot, trying to get in shape. But it just seems to me that Fran's done a tremendous job piecing this class together. A group of guys that didn't have a ton of high major offers. Maybe just speak towards the ability of Fran to, again, Tony being an example, to identify talent that he can work with.
I think Fran and Diller and that coaching staff as a whole does an awesome job as far as identifying talent. And with that being said, you can tell that they have, just in that alone, a history in the game of basketball. I mean, if you and I both played the game for 20 plus years, we can spot a kid who has talent who don't. You know, we have a lot of politics here and there who may highlight one particular kid and highlight another particular kid. And that's great for the kid. I'm not knocking a kid who's getting a 5-star rating. He's got a bunch of high major offers. That's a blessing in itself. But there's so many kids who do the other intangibles besides scoring. We need a team for somebody who's going to play defense, somebody who's disciplined, somebody who is going to, you know, understand their role on the team. There's things that this coaching staff has noticed in players throughout the history of their coaching that makes them a dominant program when putting those pieces together.
What do you see for this team? I mean, obviously a big game Saturday. People are hyping it, but obviously the players are trying to keep that one game at a time mindset. I'm sure you have that as a coach and a former player as well. But what is the ceiling for this team? Is this a legitimate national contender in your mind?
They're national champions, baby. I'm going to go ahead and call it what it is. I'm going to call it spade a spade. They national champions. So 2020, 2021 NCAA national champions going to be Iowa Hawkeyes. So I'm going to just call it out as it is.
People are going to like hearing that. the one knock on this team for several years, and obviously much before Tony was probably even was a twinkle in the eyes of fans here, is the defense. And Tony really seems to have that ability to be an on-ball defender, again, with his athleticism and his motor. But again, with as much experience as this team has ahead of him, playing time is going to maybe be at a minimum this year. So what does this team need to do to be good enough defensively to actually achieve what you just said, be a Final Four national title contender? Because it has lacked, and you know, it's going to be a true test Saturday, but what does this team need to do defensively?
Defensively, just from a fan's perspective and the coaching perspective, I mean, it's just every day, you know, we always say defense wins championships, you know, scoring points wins games. So I think the defense is going to continue to improve. I think on the ball defense is going to continue to improve as the year go on. Because, I mean, again, we're in a weird year to where practice was limited, summer conditioning was limited. So we could make the excuse to say, hey, we haven't had much time to develop. But at the same time, it's like, you know what? What is enough time to develop? And that's going to be something that's always going to be intangible, whether we have COVID or not. So I think teams who can adjust on the fly game per game is the teams that you're going to see in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, and so.
Absolutely. It has been one of those years. We talked about COVID. I know Jordan Bohannon came out and said several weeks ago that he – at the time said that seven different players had had COVID already from the Iowa roster. And I'm not asking you to go into specifics about Tony or who's had COVID and who hasn't, but is Tony, do you feel that he's ready with his progression to, if three or four guys do go down and he has to, you know, potentially get, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a game, is he ready for that grueling stretch that is going to be the Big Ten this year?
Yeah, and that's one thing. One thing me and him always talk about is, like, if you stay ready, you never got to get ready. You know, always stay on your toes, always put up shots, always hit the weight room. Take your craft seriously as if you was playing 40 minutes a night. If you're the kid playing 5 minutes a night, practice as if you're playing 40 minutes a night. Because when your name is called and you're out the floor for 40 minutes, you're already used to it. It's nothing new to you.
Has he postered anybody in practice yet that you know of?
he said I think he mentioned one time he almost got Luka one time. He almost got him.
Okay.
You know, I don't know how true that is.
Well, we look forward to seeing that in future years in the Big Ten. What is Fran, going back to Fran McCaffrey, this is a question I ask every former player, current player that we've had on the show. What is Fran like? And I know you're not there every day, but what is Fran like from what you know behind closed doors? Because he's again, everybody loves him. Everybody that we've talked to has said nothing but great things about him. But there is a stigma with Fran sometimes from the national media. What is he like in practice behind closed doors?
He's a great guy. I mean, my personal relationship with him, I mean, he's a great guy. We get along great. We laugh, we joke. And it's funny because most of the time we talk about other things besides basketball. You know, that just shows he's a human as well, too. You know, and he always has encouraging words. If anything goes wrong or if he needs anything from me to tell Tony, he lets me know. So I think Fran and Dylan and that staff are just a great people in general. From what Tony has told me in practice, I mean, Fran's a great coach he wants to play for. You know, he encourages them. He gives them insight. The team itself is encouraging. Again, like everything he told us in recruiting part, he's displaying that as Tony's at Iowa.
One question that I did bring up to Trey Dickerson, former point guard here, just a couple months back. I'm sure you follow closely, at least were aware of some of the allegations of racial injustice at Iowa in the football program over the summer, racial biases. And this is a question I asked Trey Dickerson, and he gave me a very pointed answer, but I want to ask you this as well. How does Tony feel that he has acclimated to the Iowa City and the Iowa culture here? Because I think we all here locally, I'm born and raised in Iowa. We have a version of, or a idea of what we think the Iowa culture is, but maybe we do have blind spots at times. What has Tony talked about? Does he feel like he has acclimated? Does he feel like Iowa City's home yet?
So far, yes. I mean, I haven't heard anything bad from his aspect. I always ask him every day, you know, how's life, how's college, how's the people around you? He said everything is great. And a lot of times, if you really get to know Tony, he's always cool, calm, and collective. That's just him most of the time. You know, if something's wrong, he would tell me or his mom or his family or so. But I mean, as far as Iowa home, I believe he considers his home. You know, I mean, that issue of the racial injustice, I mean, that's something that we're going to be always progressive as the years go on. But being a 19-year-old kid on a college campus and being an athlete at that, I mean, he hasn't really encountered that at Iowa per se. I don't know verbatim if he has, but I mean, he tends to enjoy Iowa City.
It's good to hear. Give me a final score for Saturday, Zags and Hawks.
I'm going to say 100-0, and I'm being honest. No, I'm kidding.
I think if Iowa's can score 100, you're probably in good shape. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you off there.
No, I was going to say final score, I would say 77-87 Hawkeyes.
If Iowa can hold Gonzaga to 77, that's a huge win. So, yep. All right, Frank. Hey, we appreciate the time, and again, we got a kind of a glimpse of not only Tony, but this whole freshman class, which is going to be the future of Iowa basketball in Iowa City. So we appreciate the time, and we hope to have you back on a future show. Go Hawks this Saturday.
Hey, go Hawks. Thank you.
Big thanks to Frank Henderson for jumping on the show this week and for giving us the time. He certainly has a good perspective of this young freshman class that we're going to see more and more of at Iowa in the coming months and certainly in the coming years. Keegan Murray, a big part of that, but certainly Tony Perkins looks to be part of that as well. And Alex, Tony looked good on Sunday, and I think Aaron Ulis has looked good. This freshman class looks to be, from my naked eye, again, early on in the season, guys aren't getting a whole lot of playing time. They look to be as ready as any freshman class that I can remember, maybe with the exception to Cook, Bohannon, that freshman class, but at the same time, that freshman class was extremely inept defensively.
Yeah, I think, you know, this freshman class looks totally different, and there's a lot of athleticism. It's the one thing I've taken away from it. To me, I think, you know, I'm probably right now that, you know, I like Keegan Murray. I like what he's brought. The fact that he's getting big minutes right off the bat is huge. I thought he played pretty incredible against Northern Illinois, or Northern Iowa, as the commentators called him. But yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, besides the athleticism, one thing that was mentioned in the interview was that they're having a lot of fun. And that does seem different than other years. Not to say they haven't had guys that were having fun, but especially towards the end of the game. And I know it was garbage time, but the end of this last game, you could tell these guys actually really enjoy playing together. And the freshmen especially are kind of tight-knit group. So it's pretty cool to see.
Tony Perkins is going to get a lot of playing time, I think, at some point in his career. Yeah, I would not be surprised to see him end up being a starter. He's an interesting kid because his story, as Frank brought out, a kid who didn't get a whole lot of high major, well, really no other high major offers. But Frank himself was a walk-on at Ball State. And, you know, Tony could have went that route, but Fran sees the potential in guys, and Tony's just another example of that. You think about guys like Aaron White we mentioned in the show. So this is going to be an opportunity. This class really has time to develop. There's so much depth in front of them now. There's always that opportunity if guys come down with COVID or get hurt, that some of these guys could begin to play more. I think Aaron Ulis looks extremely comfortable. He's what's amazing about all of these guys, whether it's Ulis, Perkins, you know, the Murray twins, seems like they all are completely unselfish. And Ulis just seems like he is confident, at least on the floor. He looks confident. He's not out of control. He looks like he can shoot, you know, decently for a freshman. And he's making the right passes when he's in there. And granted, it has a bit against great competition, but he's particularly impressed me so far this season. Your thoughts on Aaron?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think he looks comfortable, and he looks like a guy who's been playing basketball a long time. He just comes across that way, like a guy who's seen a lot of stuff on the floor, and you know, kind of knows the right moves. And I think that's kind of an intangible thing that you can't really teach, but you know, that people see in recruits, and I think we're seeing it with him. And you know, when you get into a game, it's kind of just a feel thing. There's no way you could ever measure something like that with statistics or anything else. It's just an eyeball test, and he definitely passes that for now.
All right, let's get to Gonzaga, because that's the game everybody's been looking forward to. We've been talking about it since the offseason. You know, they obviously sport a very talented front five, especially their top four guys with Corey Kispert, Joel Ayayi, Drew Timmy, and then Jalen Suggs, who, of course, Fran McCaffrey was after hard in the recruiting process. And then Andrew Nembhard, kid from Florida that transferred in. I mean, they've got five guys. Now, I think they've been starting the big man Watson, as Nembhard's more of a natural point, and Jalen Suggs just simply is not going to be on the bench for anybody right now. He may be one of the best, if not the best, point guards in the country. But here's the deal. You are under the opinion that Connor McCaffrey should not be starting. You want to explain that on here?
Well, I think it depends. You know, I think he's good in certain lineups. I think he's probably necessary in certain lineups. But, you know, this team has a lot of polarity. And what I mean by that is you have some guys, let's say Bohannon and Toussaint is a good example, where you have one guy who can shoot the lights out but can't really do much else. And then you have Toussaint, who is kind of the opposite, where, yeah, I don't know if I've really even seen him shoot this year, but he's not a great shooter, but he does everything else quite well. And I think with Connor, a lot of it depends on who's on the floor, if he needs to be out there, and, you know, the lineup he's having to guard. Because, you know, starting him at the four, yes, he's a bigger, say, a point forward maybe, but, you know, to be guarding the four, we've seen a few times where he's had trouble, you know, boxing out, even against Northern Illinois once or twice. So I think it just depends on the personnel. I like to have him out there for his obvious skills of, you know, he's an incredible passer mainly, and a smart guy. So, you know, if I feel like he's a good shooter when he's wide open. He hasn't looked great yet, but last year it seemed like he kind of settled in, where if he was wide open, he'd pretty much knock down threes. So I think as long as he sets his feet and he takes good shots, I don't mind him shooting, but he needs to, you know, he needs to pick that up a little bit this year. But yeah, I think
you do realize that Bohannon is fifth all time in Iowa history in assists, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, you said to me, you said he does one thing well, and that's shoot threes. He's fifth all time in assists.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what you mean is what he can't do is defend. I mean,
well,
he's a great passer. He's probably just as good of a passer as Connor is.
I don't think of him as a terrific passer, I think.
You don't have to think of him. He's got fifth all time in assists. Yeah. I mean, those numbers don't lie. He's only been here. This is literally, he's been here. I mean, he didn't play last year. This is his fourth year. I mean, he played 10 games last year, but this is really his fourth year. And he's already, you know, haven't even started conference play, and he's fifth all time.
Well, I think that's a lot of that's a function of him being here a while and also having the ball in his hands a lot, just because he's the smallest guy on the floor and he tends to bring the ball up. I don't think of him as a great passer, mainly because he's not a guy who can really get penetration. So I think numbers can be deceptive sometimes.
Connor doesn't get penetration, but Connor makes other. I mean, he makes passes out of the post. He makes terrific feeds into Garza. He doesn't drive. He can't drive. Yeah, I mean,
he does. He doesn't drive, but he does sometimes pass from the high post, and you know,
it's
most of the time. Most of the time he's throwing the ball into the, you know, from the 3-point line. But I don't think of Bohannon as being a great passer. He's not on the level of McCaffrey. I don't think anyone would say that.
The numbers would disagree with you.
Yeah, I would like to hear somebody else say that they think Bohannon is as good a passer as McCaffrey, because I don't see that.
Well, I'm not saying he's as good. I'm saying he's on the same level. I mean, you can't, like I said, with all the point guards that Iowa, and they've had some great ones. B.J. Armstrong, Mike Gesell, Jeff Horner. I mean, that's just, you know, those are just three of the, you know, best point guards. And you know, you probably go back into Lute Olson days. We're talking fifth all time. And Mike Gesell played all 4 years. You know, I mean, it's not like he was a terrific shooter. You know, he was primarily a true point guard. So I don't think you can take away the fact that Bohannon has accumulated those numbers, and he doesn't turn the ball over. That's the other thing. And that's what I don't think you appreciate about Connor. He's not the best athlete, but he leads the country in assist to turnover ratio. And you try to make the argument that Keegan Murray should be starting over Connor. You realize that Keegan Murray, as great as he's looked so far, has been here for like 3 months, maybe 4 months. Connor has grown up knowing his dad's offense and knowing every position. Franz made it very clear Connor could play any position on the court. Now, physically, he's not going to probably be able to play at the five, and four is a stretch, but he is, I don't think anybody that is familiar with the program can disagree with the fact that he is probably the smartest guy on the court, and that's including Luka Garza, because he is a coach's son. He is a honor roll student, 4.0 kid who's been academic all Big Ten. I just think you're underestimating his skill set from a leadership standpoint and from a knowledge standpoint, and those are just as big as physical attributes that Keegan Murray would bring, which are 6'8". And yeah, he's athletic, but again, just because you're athletic, I mean, we saw Tyler Cook struggle defensively for most of his career, and he's the best athlete Iowa's had in the Fran McCaffrey era. So I just don't know that that's a valid argument for Connor, given everything else he brings.
Well, like I said, I think it depends on the lineup, who they're having to play. I mean, it basically comes down with Connor, to me, of him having to guard a bigger guy. You know, I think Keegan Murray obviously needs to work on his strength. That's his main problem. But he's long enough, and we've seen this in the pros especially, where you can have guys like a Kevin Durant who, you know, look at him, he can't be very strong, who can easily guard the five, even not in small ball situations. He can guard the five. He can guard a legitimate five just because he has that length to bother people.
Yeah, I don't think comparing Kevin Durant to Connor McCaffrey is fair to anybody.
No, I'm comparing to Keegan Murray.
Okay, I don't think that's fair to Keegan Murray either. I mean,
I'm talking about on defense. I don't think there's a big difference there. I mean, he's a long, you know, very, very slender guy.
Kevin Durant.
Yeah, but on defense, I mean, Kevin Durant's not been known as, he's a very good defender. He's not been known as a defensive stopper or anything. I think if you just looked at the defensive side of the ball, I could compare Durant with Keegan Murray. I don't see why not. But so, the point is he can, you know, he can guard a guy who's probably stronger than him just because of his length, and he does have very good timing from what I've seen. Shot blocking, a lot of it's just timing. And if you have athleticism and no timing, and, you know, if you want to compare him to Cook, I think Murray's quite a bit longer. I'm not sure his wingspan, but to me, he looks like a much better rim protector, shot blocker in general than Tyler Cook was. Obviously, he needs to work on his strength, but yeah, I mean, that's...
So you're an advocate for starting Keegan Murray on this team, number three in the country. You're an advocate for starting Keegan Murray.
I don't know anything about Gonzaga, but I would say if number four on Gonzaga is a big guy, I'd say yes. But I don't know anything about him.
Here's a couple problems, though. You don't start and then sit. Start and sit. You tell me what coaches that you know that have been successful in college basketball that are switching their starting lineup based on matchups. It doesn't happen. You can change minutes based on lineups, but you don't change your starting lineup. That just messes with team chemistry, especially when he's the floor general that he is. He is considered by all these players, whether you like it or not, as the leader of this team.
I'm not saying that he needs to be the one to sit necessarily. I think that's just how the chips kind of have fallen. You know, I don't mind having him out there. It's the fact that you have, let's say your lineup is Bohannon, Wieskamp, and you know, let's see. So Wieskamp at the three. Neither of those, neither Wieskamp or Connor is going to be able to guard a big or a guy who's even, you know, 6'9", you know, decent sized guy. Neither of those guys are really going to be able to box a guy like that out. So, I mean, what do you do in that situation? You have Garza and that's it in the paint.
No,
and
you, let's you say play zone, which is what Iowa does a lot. You play a lot of zone. And that's how you avoid getting Connor McCaffrey isolated inside. That's what you're going to have to do.
It's not just offense. It's not just defense, though. It's also rebounding. It's another big, you know, issue. I don't mind on the offensive side of the ball. I don't mind defensively so much. But when the ball goes up and, you know, comes off the rim, I just see Connor getting bullied a bit. Now, Fran has managed that really well, I think. But I'm sure he's aware of it. I mean, you put a bigger guy on him, he's just gotten bullied a bit in each game, pretty much, even the Northern Illinois game.
I don't know that bullied is the right word when, you know, I don't think you realize the fact that he played at the four all of last year. All of last year, he was going up against the best, the big men in the Big Ten last year. Now, what do you want to call them, fours or fives? The front court last year in the Big Ten was maybe the best cumulative front court that we've seen, with the likes of Otuor, Jalen Smith, Luka Garza, Xavier Tillman, Aaron Henry, and I mean, I think the kid held his own. So I'm just saying, to throw Keegan Murray into the mix because he had a good game against Northern Illinois, Southern, and Western Illinois is not fair to Keegan Murray. Because let me tell you something. First of all, college basketball teams play more small ball, and in the NBA, they play more small ball than they ever have in the past. So the need to have a big four because of height purposes has severely went away. Okay, North Carolina is the biggest team I was going to face all year. All year. They've got four guys who are 6'10" or bigger, one guy who's 7'1". So they're not going to need a ton of size at the four. Your only other option is you play Josh Ogundele, who nobody's going to argue that he's ready to play probably at all in the Big Ten. Or you play Jack Nungey, and then you have no one backing up Luka Garza, and you're going to give up a lot of you're going to give up a lot defensively when you play Jack Nungey at the four and you're trying to play man to man, because guess what? Teams are playing small ball, and when they pull him outside, you're going to have problems. So I'm saying is, you don't switch up starting lineup. You understand the fact that Connor understands the position. He is bigger than the typical point guard, or, you know, he's more of a point forward. And you look at the fact that most teams in college basketball are playing small ball. And so if you need to switch up minutes, you can do that based on matchups. But you know what? They won the game against North Carolina starting Connor McCaffrey at the four. So I don't think you don't throw, and Fran is not going to put Connor on the bench. I'm just telling you that right now.
Well, this, I think of it from more of an opposing coach's point of view. If I'm an opposing coach and I see 6'5", you know, Connor McCaffrey out there who can't really jump, I'm going to put in a big guy at the four. So, yeah, most of the time you're probably going to be dealing with lineups that are not going to hurt you in that way. But if I'm an opposing coach, that's just that looks like a soft spot to me in the opposing team's lineup. So, I mean, we'll have to see.
It doesn't really matter when you're playing zone. When you're playing zone, you're not matching up four versus four. I don't think you realize that. Well, you're not matching up one versus one, two versus two. You're not doing that.
I don't really
play zone.
I don't really care about that. It's more, let's say when the ball goes up, you know, you have to find a guy to box out. You have, let's say you have two big guys on any team. You have one big guy in Iowa, basically. Now, obviously, Wieskamp can rebound the ball. He's probably the best rebounder on the team. I don't know. Best starting.
I think Garza.
Garza. I mean, I'm talking about anyone other than him. So you have four smaller guys, and Wieskamp's a good rebounder. You know, Connor is good fundamentally, but he just doesn't have the athleticism or the length or the size. I think he's okay most of the time, but there are certain situations where that's going to be a bit of a liability. And I think Fran is, you know, he managed it. I think that happened a bit against ISU, but he's taken care of it really quickly. You don't see that kind of thing happening a lot, I think, because Fran adjusts the lineup or he adjusts the defensive scheme or whatever to make up for it. But
what's the problem? What's the problem? If he's adjusting mid-game to what he sees, and what's the problem?
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you come right out of the gates with that deficiency, what are you going to do? You're going to play Connor for, or whoever, it doesn't have to be Connor.
They did on Tuesday, and they busted out to an 8-2 or 8-0 lead.
Yeah, well.
So, I mean.
That's against one team versus, you know, compared. Here's the problem is Iowa's
biggest team they're going to play all year.
Who are you talking about?
North Carolina. Iowa busted out to an 8-0 lead against North Carolina, who's the biggest team they're going to play all year.
Well,
and the most NBA, maybe most NBA products besides Gonzaga that they'll face all year round. All four of those big men have a legitimate shot in the NBA.
I thought you said this week, but yeah. It wasn't until later in the game that I remember seeing, you know, Connor having trouble, but.
And again, like I said, I told you over text, you don't realize, go back and watch the cut up version of that game. Luka Garza got schooled by Garrison Brooks, got dunked on two or three times in that game. He did.
It wasn't just Garza.
Yes, it was. Two or three times. It was Garza. Garrison Brooks pinned him out and absolutely stuck it to him. Okay, that's going to happen.
Huh? We also had McCaffrey boxing him out. You remember this?
Okay, well, okay.
That's a bit of a problem.
Again, but you're not understanding the point. If it happens to Connor at 6'5", and it's happening to Luka at 6'11", then sometimes you just have to tip your cap to Garrison Brooks, who's the preseason All-ACC player of the year and who's going to play in the NBA next year, and say, look, the kid's a talent. We need to get better defensively as a team. Well, I don't think you just say, well, he got bullied a couple times. Garza got bullied a couple times, and he's Luka Garza.
I don't know that. I don't remember him getting bullied.
No, watch the tape.
Pushed around. He might have gotten out rebounded, but that's
no,
not.
No. Watch the tape. He got pinned. He got pinned for a couple times. I can even pop up an example of this because I looked this up just, and I again, that's just on the highlights. Let me pull this up and I will show you this. And this isn't a supposed to be a diss to Luka Garza. This is just to say, just because a guy or you know you lose out in a player or two and. You know, basketball, especially interior play, Garza will tell you, is all about position. And if you know, that's why Connor is so, he has the ability to play at the four because he knows where to be on the floor. And yeah, he's going to, you know, if he gets out of position, you're right, he's done. But the problem is, he's probably the most reliable guy right now that is not going to habitually get out of position. Let me pull over here. Maybe you could argue maybe the best big man that Iowa will face all year. I mean, I don't know who else is gonna, you know, besides maybe Drew Timmy on Saturday. Now watch Garza inside, okay?
Hold on a second before you play that. Can I turn it sideways? It's super tiny. For some reason it won't let me turn it sideways. Huh. Yeah, it won't rotate.
Well just look ahead. Right here in the middle. 15 Garza, or 55 Garza, Garrison Brooks. He's got Garrison Brooks. Garrison Brooks has got position, but he's kept him off the block. Now watch how Garrison Brooks takes position, and you can't argue it's physically, it's a matter of skill and footwork. Watch Garrison Brooks take Garza to school here at the 9:49 mark of the second half. That's getting taken to school, okay? Let's watch this back again.
So much, it's hard to see.
Look at this. Getting pinned and getting pushed out of the paint.
Yeah, I remember that play.
And again, there were other times where Brooks had a wide open dunk because Garza didn't roll with the pick and roll. Or, you know, I'm just saying, I think you're paying way too much attention to size and not realizing that Iowa's problems defensively have been much, much bigger than size. They have been being in position, helping, communication, and just fundamentals. And
well, I'm not saying that's Iowa's biggest problem on defense. I don't think it is.
And believe me, it's not Bohannon's problem on defense either. Size has nothing to do with Bohannon's a healthy 6'1". That ain't his size. You know, Toussaint's 5'10", and he guards. I guarantee you, Toussaint's going to get good run at Jalen Suggs, who's 6'5" on Saturday.
Well, I don't know that size really matters with Bohannon, who's just not a good defender in general. I don't really care how big he is. I think, you know, Connor for his size is a good defender. He's not a great defender because he's not terribly athletic, but he's good fundamentally. And I think in his wheelhouse, he's a good defender. I just think he's getting really stretched thin trying to deal with bigger guys, but it's not a big problem, I don't think. You know, it hasn't happened that much, and when it has, Brand has, you know, corrected it pretty quickly, so it's not a big concern. As long as it's not something that's burning them over and over, you know, I'm not worried about it.
So again, for the record here, are you or are you not an advocate for playing either Jack Nungy at the four as a starter, Keegan Murray, or someone else?
I think
They should switch up their starting lineups based on matchups.
Well, I don't know how that works with coaches. I just think I don't care who starts necessarily, but if you're looking at any time in the game, if you have, Connor at the four and you have a couple big guys that he's going to have to box one of them out or whatever, somebody's going to have to box those guys out. I think you just don't have the personnel to do that. And, you know, I think Keegan Murray or somebody, or maybe Nungy. We saw Nungy play alongside guards a little bit, but this year it's been more one or the other. So, and for good reason. But, I think Murray's been the guy who's kind of emerged as being somebody who can, you know, play several different positions, probably 2 through 5, really. You can probably guard those positions. So,
who?
Keegan Murray.
You got to know the positions, you got to know 2 through 5. It's just like football, your safety, your linebacker, you have to know those different positions.
I'm just saying physical ability. You can guard guys all the way from, say, 6'4", 6'5", up to, you know, a smaller center. I think he can bother a smaller center. He might not be great against a really big guy, but I think he can stretch across a lot of those, you know, positions. I think, you know, that's a very valuable thing. So it just depends. I have a problem, I guess, a little bit with when you have, let's say you have Connor at the four and you have a couple bigs and then you have Bohannon out there at the same time. I mean, there's two big holes on defense. I wouldn't say necessarily on defense so much with Connor, but for rebounding, but Bohannon's definitely a hole on defense, in man defense all the time. So I see that as being something that might get picked on going forward. I hope not. I think Fran is a very good coach, and I think he'll manage it pretty well. So we'll have to see what he does. But I wouldn't mind seeing – I don't care. I don't really care about the starting lineup, but I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, Murray and Garza out there at the same time. Maybe even have Connor at the three and sit either Frederick or Wieskamp. I wouldn't mind playing around with that, depending on who they're having to play.
Let me make this clear, though. Connor McCaffrey, you know, Bohannon's a perfect example of this. You cannot consistently put Jordan Bohannon on the bench, okay? And I will admit this, and I don't think he's... I think he's a pretty poor defender. But you cannot put the all-time leader in three-point shots on the bench. And here's what I'll say about Connor McCaffrey. This is why I'm an advocate for him playing, because you cannot put as good of a passer as Connor McCaffrey is on the bench. The feeds that he gives to Garza, to Nungy, and I'm sure, you know, next year, Josh Ogundele is going to get in shape. The passes that he's able to make, and we're talking it from outside, inside, he's able to do that from the high post as well, across to the two wings, is as good as we've ever seen. I cannot think of a more precise passer and a guy who is just consistent and doesn't turn the ball over than Connor McCaffrey. So I think what you got to realize is Bohannon, you take the good with the bad, you take it in stride, and you realize, look, the good outweighs the bad. And I think you have to say the same with Connor. And that's why I don't think you can put him on the bench. He's too big of a leader. He's too vocal. He's too good of a passer not to play him, especially and not to start him, honestly.
Well, okay, I agree with most of that. Here's the thing that's been different from previous years to me, is this year is, you know, a national championship year. Okay, that's their I don't know if they'd say, I'm sure they probably would say national championship or bust, but that, I mean, they're right in that top echelon. And I think these are not big holes, but I think going forward, when you start playing, especially you get deep into the tournament, those little holes can be the difference. And on a championship team,
of course,
on a championship team of playing a really good team, you know, having Jordan Bohannon having a guard.
Yes, I see that. I see that. I've been talking about their defense for 3 years. They're in KenPom, they're 75th in defensive efficiency in the country. And I think the stat was nobody's ever in the history of stat tracking, nobody has ever made the Final Four with a defense that was below 50 in KenPom rating. So, no, I agree with that. But what I'm saying is the reason, you got to realize, the reason they're number three now is because of guys like, well, obviously Luka is the primary reason, but Bohannon and Connor McCaffrey. I really don't believe that if it was just the Luka show without those two guys, they're not number three in the country, and we're not talking about them in the Final Four hunt. I agree it's going to be a problem if they can't figure something out. If they can't, you know, they're going to have to either execute their zone incredibly well, improve rebounding. I mean, that's obviously been a problem so far this year. But I'm just saying, if the solution is, well, we're going to take this guy out of our lineup, then you're actually going to get worse.
Well, I think it's more of a coaching challenge than anything. I'm not saying those guys shouldn't be out there. I think Bohannon especially is the biggest coaching challenge because, like you said, he, you know, is the best 3-point shooter, you know, very possibly in all of college and has been for years. You know, he's a guy who he's picked it up this year. He didn't shoot great early on, but historically he's been, you know, unbelievable from three. So he's and then the rest of his game is not really there, especially on defense. So he's not able to make guys pay on offense either, except for with threes pretty much. So, you know, it's just a coaching headache you got to deal with. I'm not saying he shouldn't be in there. He has a quality that's totally unique and unteachable that, you know, only comes along once in a while, being a total dead eye from any range pretty much. So it's just a challenge for Fran. I think there's going to be a lot of responsibility on him this year, more so than, let's say, you have the average Kentucky or Kansas team. I don't think the coach is going to have to do as much work. I think Fran is going to have to be incredible this year, and I think that's probably going to be the biggest factor in how far this team goes.
But I also think that Connor has the exact same skills you're talking about with Bohannon that you can't teach and that it doesn't come around every year. You have that with Connor, with his ability to lead and pass. I think fans tend to underestimate the importance of a leader and someone who's vocal. Here's a kid who's the coach's son and could very easily be the target of, you know, you look at what happened with Steve Alford and his son Bryce at UCLA. Kid took too many threes. Team, you know, got a lot of criticism, seemed like they weren't together. And, you know, a lot of people blamed the fact that Steve Alford played Bryce as much as he did. Connor is not the most athletic, very much like Bryce Alford. The difference is Connor's unselfish. He shares the ball. He's obviously a leader that everybody loves. He's very confident. And you also saw last year, and he's going to be that this year, he's tough. That's something that Iowa has not had. Look at guys, you know, look at guys like Aaron White, Jared Uthoff, Adam Woodbury. And Adam Woodbury was, you know, I think he'd go to war for you. But Connor is probably the one guy who, on any day of the week, him and Cordell Pemsel were the same in this regard. They're going to go to war for you. And I just think, you know, you pair that with the fact that he's as precise of a passer. I think that's very, you have to look at him in a similar light as Bohannon. His one or two skills that he brings to the table overwhelms the deficiencies he's going to bring because of his lack of rebounding or defense.
Yeah, I mean, I think Connor's, the difference between the Alford situation is Connor doesn't play outside of his game. You know, he knows his limitations. He did do a little bit of chucking recently, a couple of threes, but normally, you know, he never plays outside of his abilities at all. And he's also not a guy who complains a lot. You know, that's something that can annoy refs and annoy opposing teams and whoever, if you have a coach's son who's kind of a prima donna, and he's not that at all. So he definitely plays the right way for being a coach's son. He's not, there's no, I don't think there's any person who could point to Fran and say, oh, there's any favoritism going on. I wouldn't say that. I just think he's a guy that, you know, like you said, he has great strengths, but he also has weaknesses that I think that the coach is going to have to deal with. And I think that's just going to be something that's going to be a coaching challenge going forward. So, you know, Fran's a good coach. He's got a lot more chips to work with this year than any other year. And I don't just mean in talent. I mean in depth. To me, it seems like even the young guys, there's more depth this year than I've seen ever. So I think Fran is going to have more options, but it's also more responsibility. So we'll see how he does.
But here's the deal. This is what I'll leave on. I still disagree with you that and this is my stance. I would rather Connor at 6'5" at the four than Keegan 6'8" at the five.
Yeah, that's a different argument, I guess.
Well, that's the one. You tried to make that argument to me, and again, 3 inches difference and a whole position difference, and we're also talking about a guy who's a seasoned veteran versus a guy who's hasn't even hit the weights yet because it's his freshman year and it's been a weird year.
Yeah, I mean, as far as that goes, I think Keegan plays bigger. He definitely plays bigger than he is as far as his length. I think Connor does not. So just looking at their height doesn't really tell you much. I think you can stretch Keegan more defensively and on rebounding because of his body and his athleticism. As far as him at five, it just depends on who they're guarding. I think Keegan could play the five at least as much as Connor could play the four, but it just depends on who they're having matched up.
I don't know. I don't, like I said, it. I don't think he's been running at the. I don't even think it. I don't ever have thought of him as a natural four. I've thought of him as a natural three. So to say he's now a five or can play five, I hope it doesn't come to that because they've got two guys that can really play the five well in Garza and Nungy. And to me, both of those guys should be getting all of the minutes. Probably Garza gets 35 minutes a game down the stretch, and Nungy probably gets 15, running some at the four as well. So,
I don't remember what I said exactly in the text, but I think I was probably more comparing those two as kind of similar situations where you probably don't want to have to run Connor at the four or Keegan at the five, but I think in
it's
certain
a difference
lineup,
of experience and knowledge. Those are the two reasons why I give Connor the big edge in that regard.
But don't you think Keegan is looking, I mean, he looks very kind of like we were talking about with Ulis. He looks very comfortable. He looks like he knows where he's supposed to be. His timing's really good. He doesn't seem to be making any mistakes, I'd say, more than Connor is. So,
But again, we're talking Western Illinois, Northern Illinois, Southern, and North Carolina Central. I mean,
we'll see.
And Iowa State is terrible. I mean, they are beyond terrible. Iowa State lost to Kansas State two nights ago, who lost to Fort Hays, which is a Division II school, like a week or two before. Iowa State is a really bad basketball team, and it's not good for Iowa. It's not good for anybody. But they are a very bad basketball team. So all I'm saying is they need to, to me, they need to utilize the experience, especially during a COVID year. These guys need the more experienced and more level-headed team, I think, right, you know, down the stretch is going to be the team, because there's going to be games probably canceled or postponed. I just think Connor's And you made the claim that Frank Garza is hyping up Connor because Connor's the one feeding his son. I mean, I think that's ridiculous.
Well, you got to admit, like, you'd love who's just pumping up your son.
But at the same time, Bohannon feeds him. He's the point guard. And we see Frederick Wieskamp. They're all trying to get Garza the ball.
Well, but that was mostly a joke with an element of truth in it. I wasn't being totally serious, but I thought it was kind of funny.
So I just want to hear you say this, because you said to me over the text that your trained eye, as opposed to my untrained eye, is the reason that you can notice Connor McCaffrey's inability, or I'm sorry, habit of getting bodied up. Okay.
I just said that I'm, because you didn't seem to have noticed him getting bodied, and I think it's been obvious
Let me make this clear. I see this whole team getting bodied a lot. This is not a good defensive team. That's what I'm trying to get you to understand.
I'm talking mainly about rebound.
Gets bodied. I don't care what position they're playing.
I'm talking about getting pushed around in the post.
Okay. Well, again, watch the tape on Luka. He gets pushed around in the post at times too.
I don't know what that proves though. Like, does that?
It proves that it proves that the issue.
I've seen him
getting
pushed around in the one time that you showed me, and I remember that play, and that was mainly Garza having bad positioning.
Yes.
Defense.
And that's exactly
That wasn't a size issue. That wasn't a strength issue. It is.
Okay.
Time.
Rebounding is not, you ask any coach, rebounding is not a size issue. Rebounding is a motor issue and a positioning issue.
Okay.
You ask anybody. Ask any, seriously. Look at Reggie Evans, probably the best rebounder in the history of the league. And Reggie Evans was what? 6'7", 6'8"? I mean, it's about motor and positioning.
Oh, there's definitely undersized, like, you know, a guy like Charles Barkley or Dennis Rodman. Rodman is the best rebounder of all time, probably, but he's a strong guy. Like, those guys are all strong guys. They're not getting pushed around. Like, you don't see Dennis Rodman.
We're talking about, ask a coach. I mean, ask a coach. If you should have come on for the interview with Franklin, ask, you know, he's a coach. I guarantee you, any coach would say, it's all about want. How much you want. Listen, you're talking about Keegan Murray being an excellent rebounder, an excellent rim protector. That kid ain't strong. I mean,
I know.
He's a freshman who didn't get an offseason of strength and conditioning.
I'm not saying he's strong. I think there are other attributes, like you said. You know, one of them is just how bad you want it. Dennis Rodman's a great example of that. You could just tell that he wanted it more, but he also had physical abilities that back that up.
Well, so apparently you're telling me that Tyler Cook just didn't want it because that dude was big, he was strong and athletic, but he wasn't ever a dominant rebounder. He goes to my theory that it's not even a theory that that guys have to again motor and footwork and positioning. Again, boxing out is especially in the zone, it is finding a guy early. And locking up with them. And again, I think
Connor does that well. He does that well, but I've seen him where he does everything right and he's getting moved and then he gets pushed under the basket.
But like I said, here's the difference. And you're trying to claim that my untrained eye couldn't see it. My untrained eye was watching the game from a team standpoint and saying Iowa needs to be better defensively. They gave up 80 points to North Carolina, who's not a very good offensive team. I saw a lot of guys fail. I saw Jordan Bohannon fail at times. I saw Luka Garza fail at times. Yeah, I saw Connor fail at times. It's not that I didn't see that, but here's the deal. That's not my solution to that is not take Connor out of the game because there aren't any other better options. There aren't better options than having a kid who's this consistent of a passer, who the team loves, who's a glue guy. There's no other better options than that in my mind. So you have to deal with it and try to improve rather than try to make lineup changes. During a game, you can make lineup changes. But overall...
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, like I said, I was pretty sure you saw it. That's why I said that, because you were obviously pretending you didn't see it.
Okay, but
so that's why
I watched him all of last year. I'm the first one last year when I saw them play him at the four. I thought, oh crap, what are they doing? But he held his own last year. He held his own.
Time, yeah. I'd say even this year, 98% of the time. But I'm just saying these tiny little slivers, when you have a team that's going to be competing for a national championship, these tiny little slivers can be the difference between going home or not. Well, there's never been more at stake than this year. I think previous years, I think you let a little more of that slide just because the stakes aren't as high.
But here's the deal. Jack Nungy is not quite back to a point where he's from a stamina standpoint, where he can play probably more than 15, 20 minutes a game. If he can get to that point, remember, he just came off this knee. He was away from the team after his dad's death. If he can get to a point where he is back completely, maybe he gets more time next to Garza. But here's the deal. In the meantime, Connor's their best option. He's going to play no matter what, even if Jack is 100%. And what I go back to, there are teams that may be going to be like North Carolina, very few, that can put up multiple guys that are going to be able to body Connor up. But also, there's a lot of teams that don't have that second big guy to play, and Connor's going to be the best option because they're playing small ball. And so you need to be able to have both of those guys ready to play the four. And
I think 95% of the time, he'll be fine.
Well,
I'm not,
this Saturday,
I'm not saying he's still
this Saturday we're going to find out because he's going to probably have to match up. If I think Iowa's going to play a lot of zone this Saturday because they've got a Gonzaga team that is just going to be better at several positions outright than Iowa is, especially defensively. And if Iowa wants to compete with Gonzaga when Gonzaga has the basketball, Garza, Drew Timmy's very, very crafty. He's not real athletic. Corey Kispert's a guy that I think Wieskamp can match up with. You know, maybe Frederick can match up with a Yayi, but then you think, okay, who's going to guard Jalen Suggs? You know, Fran McCaffrey said the other day that Bohannon, well, they asked him, well, who's going to guard Jalen? And his response was, well, J-Bo can run at him. And that's just, that is just makes me want to poop my pants hearing that. And no offense to Jordan Bohannon, but if they're playing man-to-man defense with Bohannon guarding Suggs, I was in trouble defensively. But here's what you have to also realize, and this is what I'm slowly starting to realize, that Iowa doesn't have to, and I've always thought this, but I guess I'm seeing it play out. Iowa doesn't have to be elite defensively. They just don't. I didn't think they played that well defensively against North Carolina, but they won by 13 because they scored 93. Okay? They scored 103 against Iowa State. They're averaging 100.5. Now, that's not going to continue, obviously, once you get, you know, this Gonzaga game in the Big Ten. But I think what we have to realize is Iowa, if they're 75, I think if you get their offense, their defensive efficiency up to 50, ranked 50 in the country, that's enough to make a Final Four run, in my mind. But listen, this Saturday, they're going to be exposed, not just Connor, not just Jordan. They're going to be exposed as a team if they haven't gotten significantly better. Gonzaga is going to put up 95 to 100 points on this Iowa team if they haven't gotten better. And Iowa could lose by 10, 15, 20 points if they haven't. I think Iowa could also outscore them 100 to 95. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope Iowa scores 100. I hope they hold Gonzaga to 60. Now, that's not going to happen either. But I'm just saying we're going to have to see a collective team effort because this Iowa team, as much as they've talked defense, they are still not one of the better teams in the Big Ten defensively. And I probably are not even in the top half. And that is, to me, that is the problem. Cumulatively, not just Connor and his ability to rebound. Cumulatively, the defense, if it's not better, they're not going to win a national title or probably get to the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that's obviously the issue. I think Fran is just, you know, he's going to have a really big job of trying to fill up those little gaps as far as running Bohannon at, you know, elite guards. That's, it becomes an issue in the tournament, especially because you have a couple times where he gets an isolation situation and he's going to get blown past. And here's the thing about Bohannon is even if he doesn't get blown past, even when he contests, he just doesn't have the athleticism. You said he's 6'1". He plays like he's 5'10". He plays way smaller than Toussaint. He doesn't contest. He contests technically fine, but he's not able to actually bother anybody. So, you know, he gets a hand up, but he looks like he's about 5'10 when he gets a hand up.
His bigger problem is staying in front of guys. That's his biggest problem. He can't move laterally.
But even if he does everything right, okay, that's the problem. That's another problem is even if he does everything right, when he gets a good contest, it's still not a good contest just because of his lack of athleticism. So
I still wonder if maybe there's going to be games where Fran runs Aaron Ulis or Tony Perkins because of their, you know, I think Perkins is, again, I know this is a different high school and college. We haven't seen him, you know, on a big stage yet, but I think Ulis and Perkins have a better athletic ability to stay in front of quicker guards, just like Toussaint.
Right. And here's another thing, as far as if you're playing Toussaint, you know, Iowa is a great three-point shooting team, but if you're playing Toussaint and Connor at the same time, you have two guys who can't really stretch the floor at the same time. And historically, having three good three-point shooters is probably fine, but they're fairly reliant on that now, and, you know, I see that as being an issue, so...
I don't know if I agree with that. Their three-point shooting... Here's the deal. That North Carolina game, okay, Nebraska last year, as you may or may not recall, at Nebraska, Nebraska sent three guys at Garza every time down the floor, three guys. And Iowa was ice cold from outside. The difference was they had Bakari Evelyn, Joe Wieskamp, and C.J. Frederick. This year, they have a healthy Jordan Bohannon, a healthy Joe Wieskamp, and a healthy C.J. Frederick, along with Keegan Murray, who can shoot threes, Jack Dungy, who can shoot threes. I don't think they're reliant on that. I just think they've got too many weapons for them all to be off at the same time. Garza is so dominant, like the North Carolina game. He still had 16 and 10 or whatever it was. But he's so dominant that he is still, even if they're able to contain him under 20 points, they're going to have to send so much at him. Just like that North, we saw that North Carolina game. They had shooters. They made 17 threes. They have shooters everywhere. You're telling me you're afraid of all three of those guys being off some game? I'm not.
No, that's I'm not sure reliant is the right word. I think that that's where a lot of their points have come from. You know, and I think that's it's just a bit of a you're digressing a bit away from that when you have Connor and Toussaint who, you know, basically can't shoot. So, you know, it changes the dynamic. I'm not saying that's not workable. I think it I'm sure it is. You know, you have three other guys, especially when your center can shoot. You got three other guys, but when you have two guys out on the perimeter that can't shoot, you're going to have a lot of, you know, guards is going to get clogged up inside. He's not going to be, it's just going to mess up. I think it messes up the dynamic, especially with guards the way he plays. He's not the best passer out of the post. Yeah, I think he's gotten better for sure. But when you have a couple guys who, you know, if they're wide open, they're okay, maybe okay. And if they're not wide open, they just shouldn't be shooting. You know, I think that's
well,
going to
the only guy is Connor, though. I mean, if the starting lineup is Garza, Bohannon, Frederick, and Wieskamp, those are three marksmen. Those are three of the best three-point shooters in the country.
I'm talking about if you're playing Toussaint and Connor at the same time, if you have to deal with an athletic guard where Bohannon's getting burned, I'm talking about that specific situation. So,
well, the again, difference, it's I a think, though, with Toussaint is his ability, when he's in the game, they're going to have the ability to get to the basket more. So
sure, yeah,
you know, and I think he can shoot threes, and he hasn't had to, but I think he's improved his 3-point shooting from everything I've heard. And like you said, Connor is serviceable. Huh?
Have you seen him shoot a single three this year? Because I can't remember one.
I think he shot. I vaguely remember one that I think he missed. But I mean, he's obviously not in the game to shoot threes. That's just not what he's in there for. But I don't know. I look at this team and I think if they stay healthy, I just don't, like I said, I don't see three guys. This starting lineup is going to be what Iowa rides most of the time. And even when they're not riding all three guys, if you've got one or two of those 3-point shooters in there, that is such a weapon when you have Jack Nungy and Luka Garza inside. Either one of them. I mean, you know, it's funny, when Iowa, now that they have all this national attention, you know, sports writers are just constantly writing about Iowa when they never used to before because of their ranking and because of Luka Garza. And the day after the Iowa State game, you know, Jack Nungy had like 18 points, and John Rothstein of CBS Sports, and I think it's collegehoopstoday.com, wrote a big thing on Jack Nungy. And you know, I think it was it Fran Fraschilla that called Jack Nungy? They have a miniature Luka Garza now with Jack Nungy. I mean, do you think of Jack Nungy that way? I don't, but I think it's interesting that people are starting to hype him. And if he just came back from rehab. If he can continue to progress physically, I think he could be more dominant than we realize. I really do. His size and length, I think he may be. I don't want to say he's the next Luka Garza at Iowa. I'm not going to say that at all, clearly. But he could be the next. He could be the next focal point of an offense at Iowa.
Well, he has to me. I don't know if you remember me saying this when Luka first started playing at Iowa. I think Nungy has the same problem where he doesn't have the lower body strength. And I don't know if you remember this, but Garza was severely lacking in that area for a while, and it was really last year, you know, I assume the off season before last year, where he really, you know, like we don't think of that as being an issue at all. Whereas before then, you know, Luka was a bit, he was still a big guy and he was still strong, but lower body strength to me was the big issue with him. And I think that was probably the one physical way that he really, you know, turned his game around. Look what he did last year. So, you know, I think if Nunji does the same thing, he just needs to really hit the weights and hit the food hard. And, you know, I, as far as the skill set, you know, the touch that Garza has around the rim, Nunji's not bad, but you don't see that hardly ever. Garza has the feel of a much smaller guy, you know, all the way from shooting all the way down to around the rim with hook shots and everything. I don't think Nunji's a bad player, but say he's the next Luka Garza, I mean, I don't see a connection there really. See, so other than the fact he shoots the floor, he's a big guy. Yeah.
All right. Before we make our pick for the Iowa Gonzaga game, we're not going to talk too much about football because the football season's over. The regular season is over. The Big Ten decided to schedule. By the way, did you watch the Wisconsin game?
I listened to it and then I watched the cut down version.
You've been a fairly big criticizer of Spencer Petras. Is he progressing the way you'd hoped he would have earlier this year?
Yeah, I think he's gotten better. I mean,
he made a couple big time throws, you know, against Illinois and against Wisconsin.
Good to see him hook up on a couple deep passes. He still overthrew a couple, but you know, pretty badly. But he's
becoming a second half quarterback.
Yeah, I think he's progressing. I think that was probably a difficult game, you know, weather-wise. I don't know how much the weather affected him, but it's got to affect somebody a little bit. You know, he's a bigger guy, so maybe it doesn't matter so much as far as his grip on the ball. But I think he's improving at a slow but steady pace. So, I'm not down on him. That's all I can say.
That deep ball to Smith Marset was a thing of beauty. That was, I mean, perfect throw. Iowa should have been matched up with Indiana this week. I think we all know that. They ended up getting mad. I don't know why the Big Ten even started to call this thing Champions Week when they basically said, okay, it's going to be a championship game, and now we're just going to make random picks. Why Iowa was ever matched up with Michigan, I have no idea. Michigan, of course, couldn't get their COVID problem under control. You can thank Jim Harbaugh and the leadership, I think, on that coaching staff for not being able to, you know, that's what, 3 or 4 straight missed games for Michigan, and you can blame it on COVID all you want. Yeah, sure, it's COVID, but Michigan's like the only team that's missed this many straight games in the Big Ten. Disappointing, and I was disappointed in Kirk Ferentz. I'm just going to say it. I love Kirk, been supportive of him throughout everything this year, but I was disappointed when he went on in front of the media on Tuesday and said that they had no interest in scheduling a makeup game. And he said, well, as we're 75% prepared for Michigan. That would just not be fair to our players. You know what's not fair for your players? To have to deal with COVID all year long, not have fans in the stadium, and then do everything they can to stay healthy. They succeed at staying healthy. And then because Michigan can't get their crap together, Iowa's cheated out of a ninth game when there were games available. There were games out there. I heard a lot, and again, I know these are rumors. I heard a lot about Iowa, Georgia, Iowa, BYU. Now, if the Big Ten wants to throw that under the bus, fine. But I just didn't love the fact that Kirk shut it down. He should, to me, again, this is just my opinion, he should have come out there and said, we'll play whoever. We will play them Saturday. We'll play them Sunday. We win another game. Our guys deserve it. Instead, he said, well, we wouldn't be ready anyways. Give me a break. I've seen other teams this year play on a short week of prep. And these guys, it's not like they're physically out of shape or they're going to get hurt. I thought it was a disservice to this team to be so dismissive to it about it publicly, even if there were other factors involved as to why they couldn't schedule teams. I thought he should have been more publicly behind his players.
Well, I think that's kind of been a theme with Ferentz, and maybe it's not totally unjustified. I mean, he was saying that before the season started, and look what happened. They dropped the first two games. And
but that was more of a – what I'm saying, though, that was more of a physical thing. Okay, you're physically not ready. They are physically in shape. They've won 6 straight games. To tell me, well, we're not going to be ready because we've 75% into our prep for Michigan. We're talking about scouting Michigan. Okay?
I don't know.
He's concerned about scouting.
I think it obviously was physical coming in, but I think that was that was equivalent to all the other teams, but I get the feeling with Ferentz, it's not so much physical when he says that, and I would include early on in that. I think it was a lot more. I think, especially with an Iowa team, I think there is more preparation that has to be done as far as excusing what he, you know, what he says. I didn't even see that. So,
I just didn't agree with the, at being as dismissive as he was about it, when I think very easily you could have at least said, hey, we're willing to play, but it doesn't look like we have someone to play. I just didn't, you know, again, these guys got a shortened season, especially these seniors that thought they were going to play again. I that rubbed me the wrong way. And I, you know, I'm going to say it because I've been supportive of the guy ever since day one. Now, I hope they get a bowl game. I don't think they can get a New Year's Six bowl because, you know, that's the other thing. If they had beaten Georgia, they'd beaten BYU, you know, probably get a bowl game, a New Year's Six bowl. But I don't think they have enough to get a New Year's Six bowl, even though they have the same amount of losses as Iowa State. And Iowa State lost to Louisiana Lafayette at home. We won't get into that. But we'll see what happens at Iowa State this weekend in the Big 12 championship game. But Petras is playing better. Think about what they did this year. They won six straight games after the 0-2 start. They lost by one to Northwestern. Had they won that game, they'd be playing tomorrow at 11 at the same time as the Iowa-Gonzaga game in the Big Ten championship game. And, you know, they got off the schneid against Penn State, hadn't won against Penn State in, 10 years or something, hadn't won at Happy Valley in, 11 or 12. You look at the game against Wisconsin. They had won one time against Wisconsin since 2009 and got off the schneid there. They took all of the trophies that they had up for grabs. Of course, the Cy-Hawk didn't happen. They stormed through Minnesota. They blew a lot of teams out. Their offensive line is now a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award. They put a first-team All-Big Ten running back on display in Tyler Goodson. I'm proud of this team, and I think this team is better than people realize. We were all down on them after two games, but they held things together, and you got to be proud of Kirk. This thing could have spiraled out of control, especially with the offseason garbage and the lawsuit and whatnot, and he held these guys together.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to kind of look at it in perspective. I mean, they kind of did the same old thing where they lose the important game. But, you know, like you said, they overall, they bounce back. They've kept their wits about them. They haven't, you know, let their foot off the gas, really. They've played very well against some teams and you know, plenty well against... They've stayed very consistent, basically. And, you know, overall, this season is such a mess. I mean, to me, it's just a disaster. I'm not talking about Iowa. I think Iowa escaped a lot of that. We didn't really have much COVID issues at all, hardly. And but some of these other teams, and just, you know, you have teams that have only played five games. You have Wisconsin, who you don't even know. like their quarterback looks like he's never, like he hasn't even played before.
Well, he was 20-21 against Illinois in first week.
Yeah, did you see the pass into the end zone towards the end? I mean, he must not have seen, I don't know who it was, but he must not have seen the Iowa. Yeah, Campbell, he must not have seen him, but it was just, I mean, that's really embarrassing.
But you've got to give credit to the defense, because like I said, we saw Graham Mertz go 20-21 against Illinois and throw for like five touchdowns week one. This Iowa defense has been more dominant than, I mean, they just, year after year, Phil Parker continues to put dominant defenses on the field every single year.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Phil Parker is the best staff member on this team. It's like, I'll put him above Kirk easily. I mean, every year he performs well beyond the expectations. We always have questions, and he rarely has any holes in the defense. I mean, I'd say he's the best defensive coordinator out there. He's probably one of the best guys to have. And there's nothing anyone has ever said bad about him that I can ever remember, even throughout this summer. Nobody, I don't think, said anything bad about him. So, you know, he's probably the most valuable guy at Iowa.
So Iowa will wait for a bowl game. Theoretically, that will be announced Sunday. We'll see what happens with Iowa State and Oklahoma. I don't think there's probably any chance that Iowa plays Iowa State in a bowl game, although I think that'd be great for the state, but it's not going to be great for TV markets. So we'll see. Iowa could get an invite to the Citrus Bowl or the Outback Bowl again, or maybe sneak into New Year's Six. I kind of doubt it now, you know, if not playing this Saturday, but it is what it is. I think Iowa's going to have a lot coming back. We'll have plenty of time to talk about that. They've got a lot coming back next year. You know, they're going to lose. I think they're going to lose Nixon. I mean, I saw Mel Kiper Jr. had him at number 10 overall in his first round in his mock draft that came out today. So I think Nixon's probably gone. I think Tyler Linderbaum is gone. I think he's a first round draft pick, maybe second round, but he's the best center in the country. You know, you lose Matt Hankins. They lost Julius Brents a few days ago to the transfer portal. But he hadn't really been playing. I mean, you're going to lose Mekhi Sargent, Alaric Jackson, and we assume, you know, most of these guys have said they're not coming back, and I'm a little surprised by that. Don't know if that's Kirk saying we don't want you back or we can't. I doubt he's going to say that, but, you know, just saying we don't have a spot for you. I don't know. I'm just surprised by it because, you know, this is a free year. I get that there's going to be scholarship issues down the road, but I'm just a little bit surprised by it. But it is what it is. Maybe a couple of these guys end up coming back. But, of course, you lose Smith, Marsette, and Smith. But if they get any of these guys back, it's going to be a bonus. Nick Neiman, by the way, shout out to that dude. He was spectacular all year. And, boy, Iowa's linebackers are going to be elite. They already are. Jack Campbell, Seth Benson. You're going to get Diamond Colbert back next year if he decides to come back, and Iowa will take him back. I mean, their linebacker, they are stacked at linebacker next year.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of had questions, I guess, going in, and those are gone. It's like totally solid, rock solid bunch of guys. So yeah, I mean, I'm very impressed with the defense.
Maybe you get Coy Cronk back for another year. I don't know. I mean, we'll just see if anybody ends up cashing in on that free eligibility year. So we'll wait on a bowl game. But boy, shout out to Iowa. Love those guys. They just fought and fought and fought and won six straight games. I don't think anybody expected that at 0-2. In the conference, and had some impressive wins in a year where a lot of the more stable teams like Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan have, in a way, kind of decombusted. And Iowa's not been on that. Iowa's one of the few good teams in the Big Ten. The Big Ten's down this year, and Iowa just stuck with it. And I think you could definitely say that Iowa's the second best team in the conference. I don't care about Northwestern. They shouldn't have won that game. Iowa's up 17-0, lost by one. In a game where Brian Ferentz just called a terrible game, and you know, but hindsight's 20/20. I still think Iowa's a second best team, and I think they would have at least given Ohio State a game. I don't know that they would have won, but they would have at least given Ohio State a game. So we'll wait on a bowl game come Sunday. Big Ten play starts next week for the Iowa men. The Iowa women are rolling, although they had a game canceled a couple nights ago. They've lost one game to Michigan State. They keep falling in these big deficits. Caitlin Clark, spectacular performances from her. She leads the country in scoring, as does Luka Garza. How about that? Top scorer in all of college basketball for men is Luka. Top scorer in all of college basketball for women is Caitlin Clark. She's been tremendous, and the Iowa women are off to a great start. So they're really getting to the thick of things Big Ten-wise, as will Iowa next week. I think they open with Purdue and Minnesota. They play Minnesota on Christmas Day, which is the 25th. You know, of course, this Saturday. So let's make our picks this Saturday. Iowa Gonzaga at the Pentagon. We hope it will happen. We assume it will happen. We haven't heard any problems with Gonzaga. Of course, they've been on pause, but they're back now. CBS 11 a.m. on, again, this Saturday. Give me your thoughts. Give me maybe a key for this game overall for Iowa to get the win.
I haven't really thought about it. I'll let you go first.
I just think it's going to be a matter of being able to defend, not Timmy. I'm not concerned too much about Timmy, although people think he's a National Player of the Year candidate, so maybe I'm naive to not think of Timmy. I think the biggest key here is Jalen Suggs. Can they at least slow him down? Because they're going to have to send several guys at him. I think C.J. Frederick is the most logical pick to slow him down, at least at the outset. I'm sure Joe Toussaint will get a shot at him. Maybe J-Bo will get a shot at him, although I hope when J-Bo's on the floor, they're playing more zone or else they're putting C.J. on him. But I think Jalen Suggs is the key because he can create inside. He's the most athletic guy on the court. Corey Kispert's obviously tremendous, as is Joel Ayayi, but being able to keep those guys out of the paint. But the biggest thing is, honestly, I don't know that I can go away from this, and the players talked about it, it's transition defense. Let's be honest. Iowa, as much as you want to talk about rebounding, and I want to talk about Bohannon getting driven by time and time again by quick point guards, the key in that North Carolina game, the reason North Carolina came back in that game, was because Iowa didn't get back in transition to start the second half. If Iowa runs down the floor and gets back in transition, they're fine. I thought their half-court offense, for the most part, was fine. But when they didn't get back in transition, that's when they struggled. So I would say transition defense has got to be the key this Saturday.
Yeah, I honestly haven't seen Gonzaga play at all yet. But from what I've heard, I guess I'd probably agree the big thing is going to be Bohannon having to deal with Suggs. I think Bran is there's no way that's going to get past him. He's obviously going to have a game plan for that. So we'll see what he does with that. But I think as far as keys to the game, I think especially against better teams, Garza has to be aware of his surroundings. He's not bad in this area, but, you know, when double teams are coming, these better teams especially will send a double from somewhere where he's, you know, his blind side or whatever, he's not going to see it. He's got to be aware of where everyone's at, because he has, you know, there have been times where he's made a second move and then gets blocked from behind or whatever. He's got to be ultra aware. He's got to be good passing. He's got to be able to pass out of double teams or triple teams or whatever. And then, you know, this Iowa team has the shooters typically to make teams pay. So as long as I think he's, you know, good with that, I think getting the ball into him is not going to be a problem. I think most of this Iowa team's success, and probably no exception of this game, is going to be coaching. I can't really think of much else. I like seeing Wieskamp doing a lot of cutting. I mean, he's been good with that. I like to keep seeing him do more of that. Wieskamp is not nearly as good with, you know, putting the ball on the floor, but he's a lot better off ball and obviously shooting the three. I'd much rather see him doing a lot. I like to see him doing a lot of running without the ball. Frederick obviously is great with that too. So that's the way they can hurt him, you know, especially I think they're going to have to score a lot of points. I don't see them being able to slow down Gonzaga too much. So that's pretty much it.
Give me a final score. Remember, this is the number one offense in the country in Iowa versus the number two offense in the country in Gonzaga. And in the rankings, of course, Gonzaga is number one overall. Iowa's number three. But Gonzaga has the number 15th ranked defensive efficiency, according to KenPom. Iowa, 75. There's the difference.
Yeah. Final score, I'll go Iowa 99. Gonzaga 98.
I love how everybody's predicting that these teams are going to basically score 100. You do realize that's not the norm in college basketball.
I say under 100. That way you could say.
Well, a lot of people are saying that these teams are going to score. I mean,
yeah, 100 is. That's why I didn't say 100, because that's, you know, unlikely. It's, but yeah, I mean, 99. I'd say in the 90s. But yeah, I'll go 99, 98.
They can score in the 90s against Gonzaga's defense, I'll be extremely impressed. Because as good as North Carolina's defense is, Gonzaga's is better. So I'm going to go.
I think they're going to have to, probably.
You're probably right. Although I could see them winning a game in the 80s if they can really get back in transition, like I said. I'm going to go Iowa 88, Gonzaga 86. And I'm obviously wishful on this. I think most people are probably picking Gonzaga, although I think ESPN's FPI had Iowa winning, which I thought was interesting. I think Iowa was locked in. I've never seen a team that's as cool and collected as this team. Listening to their press conferences yesterday on YouTube, they just seem like they're level-headed. They're ready for whatever challenges lie ahead, whether there's fans involved or no fans involved. And again, I don't think there's any harm that can come from this game. If they come out here and give up 110 points to Gonzaga, they know they have problems they got to figure out. And they got time to do it before the Final Four. I mean, or before the Final Four. Before the NCAA tournament. Because, you know, it's going to be tough night in and night out. So,
Before we wrap things up, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, towards the end of Northern Illinois game, I don't know if you noticed, like when Ash shot that, you know, it's kind of a circus three and made it, and the bench, you know, went crazy. Did you see Fran?
No.
He didn't look terribly amused to me, to me, which
he doesn't.
Honestly,
does he ever look amused?
Yeah, but I think in that situation, I wouldn't be either. And I know it's garbage time. I know it's, you know, bench guys, but you're going into a game against Gonzaga. I don't think, you know, I think he sees what's coming. This is going to be.
He made the three. What are we?
So what?
Okay,
we made the three. I coach doesn't care if he makes it or not.
I'm trying to figure out what the problem was.
There's a very famous clip of Steph Curry where he's running around and he launches up a three from the top, from way beyond the top of the key, falling backwards. And Steve Kerr's like putting his hands on his head, like, "What are you doing?" And then it goes in, and he turns away. But Steve Kerr's still not happy about that shot selection. And that's Steph Curry. That's not.
Yeah, but you know, Iowa was up by like 60.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, that's the last bit of play before you're playing Gonzaga. I mean, it's doing a complete 180, so they got to be locked in, focused. And I think that, I don't know if Fran was more annoyed with that than he normally would be. Probably not. He's always probably going to be that way, but I think he was definitely justified. It's like, I don't want to have any kind of, well, we're having a lot of fun, you know, beating down this 0-4, 0-5 team. And, you know, we're going into against a team that's probably the best team in the country. You know, anyways, I just thought it was funny. If you should go back and
you think there will be a point this year during the season where Ash gets meaningful minutes in a game again? Because remember, he did last year when they had injury problems, and I thought he held his own last year. Do you think he'll get many meaningful minutes this year?
I mean, I don't see a huge drop off from Bohannon to him. I mean, obviously Bohannon's but in the rest of the game and the rest of their skills, I mean, Ash probably isn't quite as good with the ball, but Bohannon's not great with, you know, ball handling.
He's a much better
passer.
He
protects the ball. He's a decent passer. I haven't really seen enough from Ash to say.
Fifth all time in assists. How many times do I have to say that?
Anyways, I haven't seen enough from Ash to say. I honestly don't have a picture of him as a passer, as a facilitator at all. But, you know, I can see him coming. Imagine you have him and Bohannon at the same time at the end of a game. That'd be kind of interesting.
Why is that interesting?
It would never happen, but imagine those two guys start, like we saw Bohannon, where he just starts drilling ridiculous threes. Okay, you don't see Wieskamp coming up from that kind of range, you know, or Frederick probably. Those guys don't have the range. They have more of a traditional 3-point shot, whereas, you know, there's just a different way that these guys shoot that.
Who has that range is Garza.
He has a little bit more than, he definitely has NBA range.
You watch some videos. Yeah, he's got NBA. You watch some videos of Frank training with him, and he's just drilling threes from 30 feet. I mean, he's not shooting them right now in the games, but he can just drill them from 30.
I suppose he could. I mean, he's a big, strong guy. Oh, one thing I should have mentioned probably is, I think he needs to slow down on his free throws. He's always shot the same. He obviously doesn't dribble the ball at all, but I think he needs to take a second before he's shooting free throws because he's not been great so far. He's not as good a free throw shooter as I think. He hasn't shot as well as I think he is. I think he's a better free throw shooter than he's been for the last couple of years. And I think he needs to just slow down a little bit. He just gets right into a shooting motion as soon as he catches the ball pretty much. And it might not be the issue, but you know, I think if he slowed down a bit, that might help his free throw shooting. He's going to get to the line a lot over the course of the season. So,
all right, Iowa Gonzaga, number one versus number three in the country this Saturday. Biggest matchup, non-conference matchup Iowa's had in maybe the history of its program. Although I think they had one other, maybe one versus two matchup back in like the 70s. I can't remember. Obviously, I wasn't alive back then, but going to be fun. CBS on Saturday at 11 a.m. And have you figured out what you're going to do to watch the games the rest of this year when you don't have your streaming service anymore?
Those are all bridges that I cross when I come to them.
Well, this Saturday you shouldn't have to come to that bridge because it's a CBS game, so anybody with a bunny with the bunny ears and a television can watch this game. So it shall be fun. And then again, the Big Ten begins next week. Thanks again to Frank Henderson. Seems like it's been a while now since we talked to him. It's been over an hour. Kind of went longer than I intended to, but great talent Iowa has in their freshman class this year. I mean, just between Tony Perkins, Aaron Ulis, I think Ogundele is going to be great, and the Murray twins. Keegan's already shown off his stuff, and Chris will get caught up. I'm confident in that, and we were certainly appreciative of hearing from Frank and getting his perspective on his nephew and what this freshman class is going to provide for Iowa, not only this year but down the stretch. So again, thanks to Frank for jumping on with us. And again, go Hawks this Saturday, big time matchup, and we will talk to you again next week on Brad's Branded Thoughts, hopefully talking about an Iowa win. And let's be honest, if they win this Saturday, they're going to be number one come Monday. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks.